PsychMinded Media presents Best Psychology in Film with your host, Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods. Best Psychology in Film is also a book available online where books are sold. Today's featured guest, Dean Parker. Hi, my name is Dr. Catherine Marshall Woods, and welcome to Best Psychology in Film, where we discuss together with award-winning filmmakers the psychology within their work. Life is full of negotiations, some very easy to make with a clear goal and sight in mind, and some very difficult to maneuver. What is it like when one gives up on hope and finds that the only negotiation that feels worthwhile to have is to negotiate one's death? The film Call the Shot, directed by Dean Parker, explores this idea. Welcome to the show, Dean.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Fantastic. I am excited to have you on too. I had the lovely opportunity to see your film at the Roxbury Film Festival held virtually, but typically held in Boston, Massachusetts. This was a short film that really stood out to me for many different reasons, and I really wanted to get you onto the show to talk about your film and what it contains. So can you share with us a little bit about what the film is all about?
Sure, yeah. The film is about a suicidal man who forces his bartender to carry out his death wish through a life-defining conversation. So the whole film is set in one location, and it's just these two guys just having a conversation about really just about life and like what it really means to be alive, honestly, like kind of like what you said. So, yeah.
Where did you get the inspiration to think about this? I mean, I know you directed this film. How did this idea even come together?
Sure. I can't take all the credit for the idea. There's actually a writer for the film named Ron Shalom, and he got the idea actually from a Martin McDonagh, a short film called Six Shooter, which essentially just that short film, if you've seen it, it takes place entirely on a train with a bunch of like conversations. And he was inspired by that short film and the idea of a whole film in one location to create this short film. And essentially, really, he just, it's funny, I was actually supposed to direct a project during my junior year of college, and the project fell off the table. And I kind of went to Snapchat, actually, and I kind of complained about how I wanted to direct something, but I wasn't sure what to do. And he saw that Snapchat and reached out to me, because he had seen some of my previous work. That was like the one time in my life where Snapchat was like really useful. we met up and he showed me the script, and I was really intrigued by it because I was intrigued by just the idea of how it almost to me seemed like, and I would say it is like a cautionary tale where you have one character who's at the end of his rope, talking to another character that's much younger, who is kind of at the beginning, more at the beginning of his life, and sort of telling him to really not make the mistakes that he did. And I just was so fascinated by that idea, and I really wanted to direct it. So he let me direct it and really left it up to me to interpret the script and how to direct it. So.
Oh, that's a wonderful opportunity to have that sort of freedom and liberty to really have the space to interpret the characters. So I want to come back to that actually, but before we get there, you said that it's held in one location. Where is the film held exactly?
So we shot the film at a bar in Athens, Ohio, at Jackie's Brew Pub. Now that's where we shot the film, but essentially I never really give any indication of where exactly this film takes place, what bar it's at, because I really want to leave it up to the audience. I like the idea of just it kind of feeling like it's just kind of in just some sort of strange like vacuum, like where this bar is. And I just feel like not knowing where the characters are, I think adds to the whole idea of how lonely the one character is, and just how, honestly, I mean, they're both pretty lonely characters. Yeah, so it's up to your interpretation of where it actually takes place. So
I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I work with individuals with and directors is set accuracy. And one of the things that we talk about with directors and myself is how you'd like the location to portray the emotional effects that you like. And when I saw your film, I actually questioned, did he work with a psychologist on this film? And I thought that because the actual location felt almost like a therapy session, a therapy room, where the two individuals are within this time and place that, like you said, almost feels like a vacuum. It's not uncommon, let's say, for a therapist and a patient to have experiences with one another in a therapy room and kind of lose track of time. They kind of say, for some therapy sessions, this session was so long. And then others, they say, wow, my session flew by. It doesn't feel like I've been in your office for 50 minutes, an hour. So it almost feels, has that same sense in your film, is that it is such an intimacy between the two of them that this bar feels very much like a therapeutic space. Yeah. And I was wondering if that was part of your goal.
I mean, honestly, that's a really cool way to put it. I never really thought of it like that, but when we were picking a bar to shoot at, I mean, so I went to Ohio University, and that's where we shot the film, like around the campus. And it's a very, I mean, there's a lot of bars on site. And I mean, I would, you know, most college bars, honestly, I mean, wouldn't look like that. And I wanted to shoot at something that didn't feel like we were shooting something at a college. I was like, I don't want college associated with this film. And if we would have shot at any other college bar, I think we would have lost what you were talking about. And I just wanted something a little bit more, I would say, old fashioned and something more interesting. And I will also have to give credit to the gaffer of the film, Ben Carpenter, for his lighting. I think that also definitely plays into that therapeutic feeling that you're talking about. And the thing I really liked about the location myself is that I loved how we could frame shots with the bar, how the patron would be sitting, and then the bartender would be in the background, but like it would still look like they're talking to each other. And I think that was really fun to play with in terms of framing. And so I liked that idea of the whole thing, how we could use that the bar to our advantage to get shots like that. And I guess, I would say it is pretty therapeutic, but I never thought of it like that. That's really interesting. Yeah.
It's also really good to hear that you said you accredit your gaffer with the lighting. And I would agree, the type of lighting actually does have more of that therapeutic space sort of lighting. Furthermore, those shots that you mentioned, I thought were also quite important to your film. The shots of having both individuals always in the shot, even if someone was in back of someone else, really highlighted to the audience that neither one of them were ever alone in this contemplation. It was always something they were in together. Even though they may have had different feelings about being in it together, they were both always in it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because from the get-go, I mean, it does seem like the two characters, like they're not compatible at all. Because, you know, the bartender, he just wants to go home for the day. And this guy is just like luring him in. Like, what's this guy doing? Like, what is he? He's taking up my time. But yeah, got to give credit to Ron. He did a great job, like, writing those characters out. Credit to him.
I would agree. When you actually saw the script, I'm wondering, what were your visceral feelings about these characters? Did you like them?
I did. I thought the patron, he's one of those characters that when you read his character, you just want to know like more about him, and just like, where did he get his thoughts from? What experiences did he have? Just, what is this deal? Like, what is, like, you know, when you're reading it, like, you don't really from the outright know what, where is he going with this? What is his goal? And yeah, I was really fascinated by him and the bartender too, because the way that we come to realize how much these two click is so fascinating, because he just seems like just this kid that really just, you know, is just kind of doing his own thing. But then, he actually has also really interesting deep thoughts like him. And yeah, I thought they were both two characters that were just kind of down on their luck, but also like had thoughts about the world, and like, just, they were just both really fascinating. I really, really, I just really wanted to like meet these characters and see them come alive. Like, just having them on the page wasn't enough, you know? So.
Yeah, I love that idea. This idea that you noted that you wanted them to come alive, even though that may have not been the ultimate desire of some of your characters in that film. Interesting too is that here you have this one, like you said, kid who just kind of wants to go home for the night. And one of the things that I found so interesting about the patron is how his narrative started off so vague, like you mentioned, where you question what were his experiences, what has he gone through, who is this person? And honestly, at some points, like, what is he talking about really?
Yeah.
He was extraordinarily vague. And then as the film moves forward, he becomes more and more pointed with where his experiences have been and what he's really looking for. It's almost as if he was a funnel, like he started off wide and then he kind of narrowed in once he understood that this kid would actually engage with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt like, and I wondered if you also had that in mind when you were thinking about some of the shots, how that actually sometimes paralleled that. At the beginning, the shots appeared wider, and then as the film went on, they became more and more close in and myopic. And I'm wondering if you saw that parallel between how the characters spoke to how you decided to shoot.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I mean, because the whole film is a continuous 16-minute conversation. And quite frankly, that's something like that was really hard to try to figure out how to compose, because you don't want the audience to get bored with people just talking for a long time. And you don't want to end up feeling like you're just making a play. I agree. Like I did want to start off with wider shots at the beginning. I love the idea of wide shots that also are unbroken, just like letting actors just do their thing. And that was really important to me, to really feel like just this conversation was genuine and almost like, you know, they weren't quote unquote like acting, I suppose. But when things get more intense in the second half of the film, I wanted to stay on those tighter shots. We shot this film in 4K, so we were able to actually like get wider shots, but then I was able to punch in and get closer shots when I needed to bring more intensity to those moments in the second half of the film. Because when things start to get a little intense in the second half, we you know, like you said, yeah, we go on those medium shots and we stay on those medium shots, and I think that brings more intensity to those moments.
Well, as the movie progresses, it certainly does become more and more intense. The level of curiosity that is welcomed with the characters initially certainly allows for a lot of exploration for the audience to be able to get to know these characters. However, then I found myself feeling that as I got to know the characters, really concerned for the patron and for the barkeep. I'm wondering if that is what you wanted your audience to experience, was feelings of concern or anxiety, maybe even sadness. And what types of feelings did you want to elicit from your audience?
Definitely. I would, anxiety for sure, because I mean, there definitely is a change in the patron's tone in the second half, where like at first he kind of is more, it seems more like his life is fine. But like, it's funny because like, I got to give credit to Ron. You would think the person who is the bubbly, enthusiastic person has his life together, but he's not the one who has his life together at all. I mean, it's unfortunate because like a lot of people do hide the fact that fact with that kind of persona, when they're at that kind of point in their life. And even in the second half, there are moments where like he kind of reverts back to that kind of bubbly personality. Like there was a moment in the second half, and I guess I'll go into spoilers because I hope people who are listening to this will watch the film. There's that moment where they have the guns, and the bartender makes a comment, and the patron just like laughs at him. And but then at the very end, like when we finally get to the moment where like he is going to shoot him, it almost seems like that I would say the patron actually like, then you, I think that's when you really do see that he's like, you really see like how he's actually feeling, like he really does look lost and alone. And I wanted the audience to not really know where things were going, anxiety, like on the edge of your seat, because there are moments where it switches back and forth, I feel like 20 times, where you feel like, oh, okay, he's not going to actually do it. Oh no, he is going to do it. Oh, maybe not. Like maybe he'll shoot him, or what's going to happen. Cause they both have guns. So it's just like, I don't know where this is going. So, I mean, I wanted the audience to feel very anxious, and, I wouldn't say sad. I would probably say like also maybe have a feeling of just pondering what just happened by the end, with the decisions that they made and the reaction of the bartender at the end, like kind of feeling invigorated kind of by what he had just done in a strange way, like what he had done kind of maybe helps him like not go down the path that the patron did. So, yeah.
Well, I think you certainly succeeded. When I was watching this film, I certainly could not wait to see what was going to happen. I literally was, I think, glued to the screen like, what is happening here?
We had definitely succeeded with the anxiety for me was when we actually premiered the film in Athens, Ohio. And my mother came to the premiere and she sat next to me. And as soon as like things went up 20 notches in the second half, she like grabbed my knee and I was like, yes, great, perfect. This is like one of those things that you never know if like you want those emotions to happen, but you never know if it's actually working until you show it to people. And that's the scariest part of directing, is like when you actually show it to people.
And making your mother anxious, that too. Right.
Maybe, I don't know if she was very happy of how I made her feel, but I'm happy. So.
Well, this film has certainly received a lot of accolades. Can you tell us about where you've been in touring and showing?
Yeah. So unfortunately, you know, currently as we're recording, due to the pandemic, I've only ever gotten to attend one live screening, which was the premiere. That was actually like a year ago, a couple of days ago. Happy 1 year. That's great. We did screen at the Mommy Film Festival in Mommy, Ohio. That's near Toledo. We won third place there. I didn't get to go to that festival, but the writer of the film, Ron, got to go. And that was great. I heard it looks like it was a great time. But yeah, most festivals have been virtual. I liked Roxbury. I did like Roxbury a lot. What else have we been in? There's a festival that we got into here in LA called the Pictures Up Film Festival, which it's a new festival and it's going to be happening this spring. It was supposed to happen last spring, actually. And that's going to be, I'm excited for that because I've never been to an LA screening of Call the Shot. So they are planning to still do that in person. Hopefully the world can maybe kind of figure itself out by that point so we can actually do an in-person screening. Obviously safety first, but I hope there will be a way to do it because I love live screenings, and seeing people's reactions. That was great. I also enjoyed, being a part of the Columbus Film Festival in good old Columbus, Ohio. That was great. And yeah, it's just a little strange though, like just to be able to answer this question just because all the festivals are virtual. So I haven't really gotten to, I feel like I haven't really gotten to, unfortunately, like experienced too many live screenings and people's reactions. But Roxbury was definitely a highlight though, because it was great to like do the Q&A and I mean, I feel like they that was really well put together. So I enjoyed that one a lot. That was a great one.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does feel that because they are virtual, you don't get an opportunity to see the audience's reactions and perspectives. And if there are no Q&As, you actually may not have an opportunity to even speak to audience members about the film even. And so I can imagine for you as a director, that's actually what you want to be able to get a sense of is how is the audience responding to how you interpreted the work?
Right. But at the same time, though, it's great that the virtual festivals are more accessible, which is nice. So people who have wanted to see our film, like it's actually more accessible, actually, I would argue, than a live screening. Because you can there are so many festivals currently online right now. So you can watch it like 20 times, you know, so it's great.
Right. And people from all over the world who may or may not have an opportunity to travel can also then see your work.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love traveling to film festivals. There's the excitement of, you know, actually networking with the filmmakers and attending the parties. There's pros and cons to both, but the accessibility is definitely for the virtual festivals is definitely a huge pro. For sure.
So for those who are wanting to see Call the Shot, it sounds like it will still be potentially available next year as well for screening.
Yes. I've been going back and forth as to whether or not maybe at this point, should I release the film publicly or should I hold off on it until it's fully done with its festival circuit? Because this is the first time I've ever kept a film private for a festival run. And of course, you know, I didn't know back then that the festival circuit would take this long because a lot of festivals had to get postponed. So I thought by this point, the film probably would have finished its festival circuit, but that's not, you know, that wasn't in the cards. It'll still be in some festivals next year. I probably will wait till the end of the festival circuit. So we have a Facebook page for the film. It's just Call the Shot, and we post about any upcoming screenings on there. So people want to see a screening of it, make sure to go find that Facebook page and give us a like.
It's fantastic. Also, if they want to get in contact with you, can they also do so by going to your Facebook page?
I'm not as active on Facebook, I would say. Definitely you can check out my Instagram. It's Dean Parka, that's DEANPARKA. Shoot me a message on there. My email is on there as well. That's definitely the social media I am most active on is Instagram.
Well, I do have one final question before I know we have to hop off, unfortunately, which is when you thought about shooting this film from inception to conclusion, what is your most proudest moment of doing so?
Well, that's a great question. Proudest moment. I mean, it was great because this was a very... there's so many. We raised money for this film. We raised $2,500, and that was great. I was really excited about how the actors, their reaction to the film. That was, I would have to say the screening, like the premiere. That's the home stretch. And the crew was very large, and we all wanted to make something that we were proud of. And I know I would say that's the screening of our film was definitely like probably the best premiere I've ever had of a film of mine. And like I said earlier, just seeing the reaction, like from my mom and like the other people, I was like, wow, they're into it. It's great. Like that's always definitely like the best part is the premiere and just seeing all your work finally up there, and you can just take a breath like, all right, it's done. I've given it out to the world. Let everyone take a look, see what they think.
Well, I'm so glad you had that experience, and I'm hopeful with our pandemic that you'll get to have that experience again in the future, because as a filmmaker, it is very important to see how your audience is responding to what you've created for them. I want to thank you so much, Dean, for coming on. And I just want to highlight one more time that they can reach and see more information about the film on Facebook, Call the Shot, but they can also find you on Instagram at Dean Parka as well and shoot you an email, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Dean, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
As quick as I can. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Well, we'll see you next time on Best Psychology in Film. If you'd like to get in contact with me, follow me on Instagram at PsychMindedMedia. If you'd like to know anything about any of the filmmakers that you've seen on Best Psychology in Film, you can also find them on my Instagram page as well. We'll see you next time. Want to make your film psychologically rich? Visit our website at www.psychmindedmedia.com to collaborate. And find more on Instagram at PsychMindedMedia.